I'm Brad Locke.
I'm Dylan Barnes.
And you're listening to Prep Rally, a high school sports podcast brought to you by the Daily Journal and thejournal.com. Hello and welcome into the sniffle and scratchy show because we're both battling stuff in our sinus cavities. Hey, I'm back though. I was sick last week. Not so bad this week, just the cough mainly, and you got something going on.
Yeah, I had just a sinus infection from after last Friday's ball game.
So. Yeah, it must be football season. Yeah. We're getting sick. Well, hey, welcome into the program. I'm glad we're back this week. Prep Rally coming to you normally every Wednesday. Find us on iTunes, any of your podcast apps, or online at preprally.djournal.com. Follow us on Twitter at djournalpreps. And I did recover in time to go cover a football game Friday night, week one for MHSAA teams. Had a few teams out, of course, and will be the case again this week and in weeks to come because of COVID and all that fun stuff. We'll get to that later on. But first, let's get into the football rewind, look at a few big games from last week. The one I was at, Tupelo at Lafayette, great game to start the season. 6A power against a 5A power, two great defenses. Went about like I expected. I mean, I expected a low-scoring game. I did not expect a score of 5-3, but Tupelo rallied in the eighth inning, as Coach Ty Harden put it after the game, to beat Lafayette by, yes, five. It was 3-2 at one point, and I'm like, oh, no. I've already covered one 3-2 game in my life. MSU Auburn, 08. I'll never forget it. One of the worst games I've ever seen. Two totally inept offenses. This, however, was actually not a bad game to watch because these were two really good defenses going at it. I mean, you got guys like Jacarius Clayton and Zach Pratt for Tupelo. You got DJ Burgess and Mario Wilburn for Lafayette. I mean, a lot of talent, a lot of D1 talent on that field on Friday night at Lafayette. And both defenses played really well. Just Tupelo got the big turnover when it needed one. Hampton, I mentioned just a moment ago, had a big fumble recovery, and that allowed Gideon Deaton to hit a 39-yard field goal late in the third quarter to put Tupelo up 5-3. The defense held on the rest of the way. And I think they held Lafayette to like 14 net yards of offense in the second half. Of course, Tupelo only had 9 yards of offense in the first half. They had a couple of snaps over the quarterback's head, kind of contributed to that, and there was a safety that contributed to some of Lafayette's lost yardage. They had the ball. They were punting from the 21. The snap went over the punter's head and out through the back of the end zone. That got Tupelo within 3-2. So, yeah, not a lot of offense, but for Tupelo, some encouraging things offensively. Of course, they lost their two top running backs from last year. Jarius McGinnister graduated, and Kyson Brown moved back to Texas. But Quay Middlebrooks had a pretty good game. He had trouble getting going at first. I mean, again, that Lafayette defense is good. He finally broke off a 36-yard run, I think in the third quarter it was, and seemed to kind of loosen up Lafayette's defense just enough. I mean, again, they never found the end zone, but when they got that turnover, the offense was able to get within field goal range for Gideon Deaton, who had missed one from much closer earlier in the game. So he got to redeem himself a little bit there. Tupelo played two quarterbacks, Jeremiah Harrell, Lake Reed. Hard to judge them, both sophomores against that defense. First game for both of them. There were some good things. There were some not good things from both of those kids. And they're probably going to continue to split snaps going forward for the next several games until maybe one of them emerges as the guy for Tupelo. But nice opening win for the Golden Wave against Lafayette. And then we had some excitement at your game. It was a close one too, but opposite end of the spectrum, high-scoring game. 33-32, Pontotoc pulled out a last-second win over Shannon, at Shannon.
Yeah, that's a big deal there. I mean, Pontotoc's really got Shannon's number over the past 6 years or so.
Yeah.
I think they've won like four of the last six or maybe five of the last six, something like that. So they're and that wasn't the case. I think Shannon had won like 11 straight going into this past like 5 year stint. So it's obviously a little weird, but man, it really felt like that first quarter was just, it was very weird. Shannon hopped up 14-0, like bang bang, and it was like, whoa. Like, where's that Pontotoc team that went 12-2 or 10-2 or whatever it was a year ago? You know, it's kind of like wondering where they were, and Shannon looked pretty good on their end. So, but then, you know, Pontotoc bounced back and fought back. If you remember last year, Pontotoc was down, I believe, 21-0 to New Albany in their season opener before they came back and kicked the game-winning field goal.
That's right.
Against New Albany in week one of last year. So, for whatever reason, Pontotoc the last 2 years has just decided to spot the team a couple touchdowns, and then they're going to decide to play. But, yeah, that fourth quarter of this game was just absolutely wild. I'm trying to remember what I wrote in my story.
Yeah, there were a lot of points.
Yeah, it was like it was five total touchdowns and 32 total points between the two teams. Neither team could stop each other by the end. I think a lot of teams that kind of wore – both defenses kind of wore down at the end. And, you know, Connor Armstrong had a big knock. You know, he got him back into the game in the second quarter. He had, you know, two quarterback sneaks basically for touchdowns to get him back, you know, 14-13 there by halftime. And then and he had another rushing touchdown there in the fourth. But, I mean, from a passing standpoint, wasn't his sharpest knock.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jeff Carter admitted that. I think Connor even admitted that to me. You know, it's just, you know, things weren't working very early for him. A lot of underthrown balls, just kind of off time and off kilter.
Mm-hmm.
And but he found his groove right there to set it up. That game went a touchdown pass to Nick Townsend there
as on the last play of the
literally
game.
Literally buzzer sounds
7 yards
as Townsend's crossing the end zone. So really, really competitive game. It was just. Well played. I mean, I tell you, Shannon's quarterback on the other end, Jamarcus Shines, he's a guy that's been a starter the last 2 years, similar to what Connor Armstrong's been for Pontotoc too. But, you know, Coach Darrell Carter's mentioned, you know, hey, he wanted to see more consistency. You know, he's seen the flashes of it, but it hasn't ever really stayed throughout an entire game for Shines throughout his career. But last Friday night, it was consistent down in, down out.
Yeah.
If Jamarcus Shines wasn't on that Shannon team that Friday night, it could have been ugly. Seriously.
Yeah.
Like that's how important he was to them, and important as he'll be moving forward. So I think there's still a lot to like about the Shannon team. They're dealing with some injuries, but
yeah. And this has to be a game they feel like they probably should have won.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, like, and I left it out of this conversation, but Pontotoc was leading with 31 seconds left on the clock and facing fourth and five.
I mean, Shannon was.
I mean, yeah, I meant Shannon, yes.
Yeah.
I'm bad about that today.
That's okay.
But, you know, they're leading, you know, and going to punt it away on fourth and five from their own 31 and drop the snap on the punt. And instead of just trying to quick kick it and get it, you know, 20, 30 yards down the field, make Pontotoc actually have to drive the field with less than 30 seconds left, the punter, you know, kind of freaked out a little bit. Took off running. I think he may have got back to the line of scrimmage or whatever and ran out of bounds short of the line to gain. And so it gave Pontotoc a really short field with 26 seconds left to go drive the field and go win it. So if you just execute a punt there in the fourth quarter, probably win the game. And so that they're kicking themselves, I'm sure, about that. But they get new hope this Friday, and you know I think they feel like they can rebound there. So
yeah,
be interesting to see.
Couple more notable results from last week. Itawamba AHS comes out and defeats Amory pretty handily, 35-14. And then Baldwin defeating Kossuth 12-11 on a last-second field goal. Speaking of buzzer beaters, Wade Barron with a 32-yard field goal as time expires to give the Bearcats a big win there in the season opener. Okay, looking ahead to some of this week's big games on Friday. Got the Skunk Bowl, Boonville at Baldwin. Big rival game. This will be the 70th meeting, I believe. The all-time series is 33-33-3. So dead even all time. This is, you know, we did the DJ Preps football preview show earlier. We both picked Boonville to win, but I think Baldwin will be able to make a game of it, especially if they can continue to run the ball like they did last week, which they had, I think, 140 yards, which was way better than what they were doing last year.
I think it was 79 yards last year.
Yeah, 79 yards a game. And that included a game where they kind of an outlier where they had like 200-plus rushing in one game, but they could not run the ball last year.
And you consider their COVID issues last year,
right,
too. They only
too.
played like
seven games, I think.
Yeah, because I think they forfeited like two division games. I remember Thrasher picking up a win on them in division because of a forfeit. So.
Right. So Boonville, Baldwin coming off that big win over Kossuth, big confidence builder. Boonville coming off a big win over Morville, in which they had more than 400 yards rushing.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is good for them because they're still trying to figure out the quarterback situation. With they got three or four different options there. They went with Ben Sandlin and L.J. Shumpert last week against Morville. L.J., of course, is more of a utility guy. He's not going to be like the guy taking every snap.
Think like Dallas Gamble role.
Right, exactly.
What Dallas Gamble did a few years ago when he was at Boonville is similar to what L.J. is being used at. But
they didn't throw the ball many times last week. Didn't have to.
No, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, just to hand it off to Zion Young and Zion Nunn, the Zion boys. They accounted for more than 300 yards rushing between the two of them alone. So, if Baldwin's going to have to focus on stopping that run game, obviously. I mean, if Boonville can run like that again, you can forget about it.
Yeah.
But Baldwin also has a new quarterback, but he's been in the program a while, Jamari Marshall. And so maybe a little more settled for them because he is the guy at quarterback right there. And had a decent showing last week against Kossuth. So, interesting matchup, but I think I would give Boonville a slight edge. This game really fascinates me, Nettleton and Morville. First game of the year on the field for Nettleton, had to forfeit the opener because of COVID. Morville, as I just mentioned, lost to Boonville. Put up some points, put up some yards. Got Dawson Phillips there at the quarterback. You got Jacob Scott.
He broke out.
The baseball player who has not played varsity football, just had a huge game as receiver. Got Jacob Franks, can run the ball. They didn't run it great last week. They averaged like three and a half yards a carry.
It's Jordan Franks.
Jordan Franks, sorry.
Yeah, my bad. Yeah. I was like trying to think too.
There probably was a Jacob Franks at Morville at some point.
Yeah.
Probably related. They need to get that run game cranked up a little bit. But, you know, they run that air raid, mm-hmm. and Dawson Phillips is a guy that they know can throw the ball. So they'll, you know, gladly fling it around if they need to. Nettleton can throw it, we figure, because they got Ty Walton at quarterback, the transfer, and got two or three really good receivers. Also have a good running back, Roderick Patterson. So they got a lot of weapons to work with there. But I think Morville is, you know, they showed last week by playing close against a good Boonville team that they're a team that you're going to have to take seriously this year. I think they'll be better than last year, certainly.
Yeah, I think I said it in our predictions for on the show. I think this is a high scoring affair, just mm-hmm. because, like you said, with the weapons that Nettleton's got, and then the way Morville moved the ball last week against a pretty good Boonville defense. I think just both offenses are going to be pretty tough to stop. But for Morville, it's just you can't give up 400 yards on the ground again. Not mm-hmm. to Nettleton. I mean, Nettleton may not try to run it as much as Boonville does, you know.
They definitely, I would think they would try to pass it more.
I feel like the quarterback position there at Nettleton's a little more settled than that at Boonville's. So you know, Nettleton may be a little more 50-50 in the play calling area, but still, you can't, you know, don't even worry about the 400 yards. You just can't get gashed for like 10 yards a carry,
right?
Which I think is somewhere close to what it was against Boonville. So. Yeah. That's what it can happen. Needs to go down big time because I mean, if they're getting a first down every time they carry the ball. It's going to be a long
time. Trouble, yeah. And then another game to look at, New Albany and Itawamba AHS, a couple of 4A squads playing non-division action, probably both favorites in their respective divisions, I would think. Certainly Itawamba, I mean, two teams that can light up a scoreboard. We saw New Albany last week beat East Union 41-0, had a bunch of big plays, chunk plays, as the coaches call them. They got C.J. Hill, they got Joe Mathis, they got Cam Knox. I mean, they got some other guys that are stepping up and making plays for them as well. Itawamba, we all know they have the capability with Isaac Smith and Tate Chandler and Ty Davis at quarterback to hit some big plays as well, and they won against Amory last week. So, to me, this is – I would maybe give Itawamba a slight edge, but I feel like on paper it seems pretty evenly matched.
Yeah, there's a lot of intriguing deals. I think me and you both picked a relative – like, we picked – below the 30s for both teams in scoring.
Yeah, so, we'll see some defense.
We'll see some defense, but we'll see some offense too because both teams just have such like great playmakers. I mean, you think like there's Division I prospects on both ends with Cameron Knox at New Albany and Isaac Smith at Itawamba. I think both of those guys can break off a long one at any point. Both quarterbacks are experienced, you know, got a lot of talent in their arms and stuff. So, you know, I think you see it. The interesting thing to me is obviously Itawamba's defense. We talk about that. And we talked about them last year at nauseam. We'll talk about them even more maybe this year.
Yeah,
they're still really good. But you know, can C.J. Hill wear down on them? Because tackling that guy for four quarters is a chore.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it kind of makes you wonder, you know, how much ball control maybe New Albany tries to play.
Sure.
You know, obviously trying to protect that ball from Itawamba, who's constantly punching and ripping and raking it at it. So. that this is a game that I hope like one of the coaches just like sends me the huddle link after the game, and because I'll be at Boonville Bowl and I'm gonna enjoy myself there with the Skunk Bowl. It's the first Skunk Bowl I'll ever have ever attended, so I look forward to that. But I want one of them coaches to send me the huddle film so I can just go back and watch the game on Saturday of Itawamba and New Albany, because I think this one's going to be really good.
Yeah, same. So, those are just a few of the games to look out for this week. Real quick volleyball update. I got out to Oxford last night, Oxford visiting Lafayette in volleyball, two rivals there. Not a division game or anything, but still a pretty big game for both of those teams. In fact, I'll have to say, I don't usually talk about fans at games, but the student sections for both of those teams really turned out and showed out. They really created a great atmosphere at that game last night. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, volleyball is really fun when you got two good teams like that, and then like both schools bring out a student section or fan bases that are passionate like that, and you know, not the whiny complaining you know, parents or something on referees and stuff, like just the invested in the scoring, investing in good plays and all that stuff, that's really fun.
And a lot of these kids know each other. In fact, they were chanting, they would occasionally chant somebody's name from, I figured out they were chanting a name from like a kid from the other side.
Yeah.
Like Lafayette kids would be chanting the name of an Oxford kid and back and forth like that. It was kind of fun. But anyway, on the court, Oxford came away with a 3-0 win. It was not that competitive except for the third set when Lafayette finally was able to hang around for most of the set. I actually led for a good bit, but then Oxford closed with a 12-1 run. Oxford is now 12-0. They're our number one ranked team. They have not lost a set all season. 29 sets. They won every single one of them, which is super impressive and easily the best team I've seen this season. Probably better than anybody I saw, at least from our area, last season. They're definitely better than they were last year. I mean, they got pretty much everybody back. Ainsley Tack had her 13 kills. Brianna Lyons, Michael Ann East, and her twin sister Ava East. Catherine Bianco, who had like 35 assists last night. They had five girls with five or more kills. I mean, there's no real weak spots on that team. The only thing they were not great at, and I mean, they're good at serving, but they had several service errors, which probably accounted for about a third of Lafayette's total points.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, without those, it's a complete blowout. Everything else, man, very organized. I mean, the ball rarely touches the floor if it's not a straight kill by Lafayette, and they've got a couple of girls that can do that, and Kaylee Gooch and Harmony Jackson. But those players certainly had some good moments for Lafayette. But I mean, Oxford is just so deep and so experienced, and definitely. Now that I've had the chance to see them, they are definitely our number one team. There's no doubt about that in my mind.
I think to add to the fact that they haven't lost a set in 29 chances there is when you can put, like, they're not playing down to anybody.
No. They
beat DeSoto Central.
Defending 6A state champ.
Lewisburg. Mm-hmm. Lake Cormorant.
Defending 5A state champ.
Who's always tough. New Hope. Pearl. Lafayette three times now. Tupelo in a two-set tournament deal. Starkville in their first division match. And then Belmont and Alcorn Central, who was at the time our number one and number three ranked team in that tri match. I think last Thursday is when that was. So Belmont and Alcorn Central both are, 2A and 3A.
Right.
And that's as low as, they've went. And obviously that Belmont may be one of the best 2A teams in the entire state, and Alcorn Central probably one of the best teams in 3A in the state. So,
right, yeah.
They're not just, like, blowing past, just –
there's no nights off.
Like it's really, really impressive when you start looking at the entire body of work. So
yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's go on to the dreaded COVID update. Just learned today that Corinth football is in quarantine, so going to have to forfeit this week's game against rival Kossuth. First time since 1984 these teams haven't met. Big Alcorn County rivals, but can't play this Friday. Kossuth might try and find another opponent. We'll see. Corinth should be back next week. That's what the AD, David Robbins, told me. So hopefully they can get back next week to play Tupelo. Bruce football has had an outbreak, apparently, of COVID. They were already in virtual learning, had to forfeit their first two games. Now going to have to forfeit their first three games. Earliest they can get back is September 17th for South Pontotoc. West Union Volleyball is out till after Labor Day. Labor Day is this coming Monday. They're in virtual learning, so the volleyball team cannot play any matches until next week. Okay, and that's just the latest. There's still so many games this week that aren't being played, football games, because of COVID and whatnot. So
yeah, this would be West Point Starkville week. That's what
it would have been.
That's crushing.
I hate that. Let's do this week's shout out. Goes to Tupelo Christian Cross Country. They're hosting the largest meet they've ever hosted. Going to be Thursday, the TCPS Twilight Meet. Going to have 32 teams, 800 plus runners, junior high and varsity. A lot of great teams coming in. Of course, TCPS, it's won several state championships at the 1A level, including I think they've swept the last three in 1A. Then we've got Saltillo's girls, who won the 5A title last year. Kossuth's girls won 3A last year, and Senatobia's boys won, I think, 3A last year. So a lot of other good teams as well, like Morville, Pontotoc. It'll be a great time. They're going to start at 5 o'clock with that Twilight meet on Thursday. Let's close it out with Athletes of the Week. So glad these are back. First Athletes of the Week of the new school year. Male Athlete of the Week, we talked about him a while ago. The freshman running back from Boonville, Zion Nunn, had 215 yards and two touchdowns on 15 carries in that 44-34 win over Morville. Quite the debut for Zion Nunn.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine that being my first high school experience walking down the field.
You didn't do that your first high school game?
I did not. I stood on the sideline. So, that's just super impressive.
Female Athlete of the Week, Kirsten Moody, the sophomore outside hitter for Belmont, over her last five matches, and they've all been since Saturday because they played in a tournament Saturday, and they did one of those try matches Tuesday. Anyway, in all five of those matches, and they were all wins for Belmont, she had a grand total of 52 kills and 12 aces. It's not bad.
Yeah.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of Prep Rally. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out our DJ Preps football preview show dropping Wednesday afternoon at djournal.com. And this podcast comes to you every Wednesday. Find us on iTunes, any of your podcast apps, or online at preprally.djournal.com. Follow us on Twitter at djournalpreps. I'm on there at Brad Locke. Dylan's on there at Dylan Barnes DJ. We will see y'all next week.